Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. And we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program. Charles, good morning. Thank you for being with us. How are we doing? What's going on?
Hanging in, gents. Sorry, I got a heck of a head cold I'm dealing with right now, sore throat. Probably shouldn't have stayed up late watching the game last night. But
well, you sound outstanding, just for the record.
You sound fine.
All right. Well, I'll take it. Is it so? Is that the worst sports collapse of all time?
Like, it's got to be
settled on that. I mean,
I don't know. What's in your mind as a football guy? What's worse, last night or 28-3 from the Falcons?
I mean, I was there for 28-3. You know, here's my thing. Your 28-3 collapse came against arguably the greatest quarterback in NFL history, right? And you had to go to overtime for it to happen. It's hard to compare the two, but I mean, I've just never seen a team with a 29-point lead have that just absolutely no poise down the stretch. No, it's funny, man, because if you've watched the series, you can tell the Spurs are young. Like, you can tell, like, just their guard play, and they just don't have – they're not there yet with that killer instinct. And they get off to these big leads, and then they all of a sudden they get really soft. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, sometimes you see it with NFL teams that are really young. They just don't have the ability to understand how to close and pressure situations. I mean, I love Victor Wembanyama. We've talked about this before. I think he's like one of the – I've never seen anything like that guy before. But their three losses, he dribbles the ball off his foot in the first one late in the game when, you know, it's time for him to make a play. The second game he hits, you know, Castle in the back with a pass when – and then fouls Brunson when it's time for him to make a play. Last night he misses two free throws. So, like, he's anointed. He's going to be a great player. But, you know, you can see where the growth's got to come. But, God, what an unbelievable – the Knicks, man, what a crazy! As we're watching it last night, like the last like 10-15 seconds, I literally said to Don, "I'm like, you can see where this is going. Something's going to happen that's going to make this one of the finals games we'll talk about for the rest of our lives."
But see, I think 28-3 is worse because I mean the coaching miscalculation that was part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Shanahan, that was not necessary. It did not have to happen, and it wasn't just player error on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Throwing the football when they didn't have to. I mean, that'll be something that, you know, if you're really going to do the deep dive on Kyle Shanahan, you can't do it without talking about what he did as the Falcons offensive coordinator that game, no doubt.
I think it was Brady's greatness, and that was, you know, Rexro won't put him in the top 30 of his best quarterbacks of all time, but I think Brady had a lot to do with it, Jeff.
He's top 30. Come on.
Let it go.
Easily, on, right?
We really debating this guy.
It's unbelievable.
Let's talk about Cam Ward's accuracy. How about
let's do that because that's a big talking point around here this week. I mean, look, this is not just an OTAs thing. Like, he wasn't very accurate last year. There were concerns about accuracy heading into the draft with Cam Ward. So this is an ongoing thing with him when it comes to, is he going to at some point be consistently accurate enough to develop into the type of quarterback that the Titans hope he is as the number one overall pick? Apparently it hasn't gone great for him at OTAs on the accuracy front. So where do you come down, not only on him and the accuracy, but the idea in general of quarterbacks dramatically improving in that area to the point in the NFL where it becomes maybe a weakness to a strength, which we don't see happen that often.
Well, Brian Daboll did it with Josh Allen.
He did.
Right? I mean, that was a guy who dramatically, you know, obviously completely reshaped his ability to be an accurate quarterback. I get it. I totally understand the concern, particularly after the rookie season. I think we have to factor in, though, the overall roster around him last year. I mean, there's a lot that went into that. It wasn't just him. And I would be super concerned if you look back at Washington State and Miami when he played in college and said, you know, okay, he was never accurate. And that's just not true. I mean, his completion percentage, I think, you know, overall in the final 3 years of you know, college for him was 66% plus. And, you know, I think if anyone can get him on track, it's going to be, you know, Brian Daboll. But I think we have to be realistic about there are a couple of different things happening here right now. He's working with Tierney, the quarterback's coach, for the first time. He's working with Daboll for the first time. He's adjusting to an offense right now. He's adjusting to really, for the most part, what's going to be a new set of receivers for him. You know, so I think a lot of that plays into it. I also think confidence plays into it. You know, just the rhythm of kind of getting his feet under him. I'm sure he's not going to admit it, but there's no doubt in my mind he's probably swimming right now. It's his second year in the league, right? And he's already dealing with a massive amount of change around him. I think if we get into the latter stages of training camp, if we're talking about this like in late August, then I'd be concerned. Then I'm like, okay, if he's throwing a lot of interceptions, if he can't, you know, seem to get himself into a rhythm with Daboll by late August, that's something that I think then carries into, you know, the regular season. And that's, you know, you look at it, and if a guy's taking a lot of sacks or he's just playing really slow in camp, you know, those are things that by late August, you realize this is going to bleed into the season. This is now becoming, you know, something that they're going to have to adjust on the fly. But I'm not panicking now just because of the amount of change that's around him. If he had been working with, you know, if this is consistency with the staff, everybody's there from a year ago, the system hasn't changed, the roster hasn't changed, and you know, we're talking about these issues existing, then that would be one thing. But everything around him having adjusted the way that it has, and I have confidence in Daboll in, you know, solving that. Like, I think he can figure it out. As long as Cam Ward's willing to put the work in, you know, I think he can get there. So it's, you know, it's June. I get it. I understand. You know, it's not like he hasn't been working in the off-season passing program and whatnot. But I definitely don't. I'm not freaking out about this until we get into, you know, the dog days of those August practices. And then I think if it's still an issue, then you know, you're going to have to start to figure out what needs to be, you know, I think cut out of the offense, or if something needs to be cut down, or there's just certain parts of the route tree that, you know, aren't clicking for him, or the rhythm's not there, then you start to, you know, ask some bigger questions.
I'll quickly sub question this, Charles, because I got somebody who's claiming that it was all the biomechanics coach and nothing to do with Daboll, which I don't think anyone would agree with. But to set that record straight, yes, Josh Allen absolutely did all kinds of work mechanically to help himself. Yeah, but Brian Daboll had a ton to do with him becoming the quarterback. No, is, correct?
But I think both narratives can be true. You know, I think that's the big look. The one thing that I think probably gets cleaned up more than anything on the NFL level with quarterbacks is just mechanics. No matter how good quarterbacks are when they come into the league, most of them, they're a little loose. They're a little sloppy. They're not, you know, you just being completely sound in what you're doing and then being able to be repetitive about it. I mean, that was the thing with Josh was, you know, especially quarterbacks that have big arms. And I would say about Cam, the thing that is probably a little concerning is that when he played at Miami, the improvisational aspect of some of the things that he did, players that improvise a lot on the college level or have massive arms on the college level, they tend to over-rely on either their arm to get certain things done and clean up their bad habits, or again, when you're improvising and you're having success doing that, you're often you'll find guys aren't throwing off the proper platform, or they're just not being, you know, consistently mechanically sound from one snap to the next. And that's sort of the loose, you know, the very loose nature that has to be cleaned up on the NFL level. I think for Allen, it was, you know, it was a little bit of both. I mean, he had the massive arm. He, you know, there were surrounding talent issues, obviously, in college. He didn't have the kind of, it's not like he's playing with like an SEC roster of NFL caliber players in college. I think that had something to do with it. But a lot of it was just teaching him that, look, you can't, the over-reliance on your arm, you have to learn how to take, you know, shorter, more efficient things. You have to learn how to just settle down, settle your feet down. That's, you know, one of those things that you constantly hear about rookies is they just don't have the confidence, or, you know, even, you know, first-year, second-year players to just settle down and be very meticulous and consistent about what you're doing with your feet and your platform, and you starting to weed out some of the bad habits that because of your talent level were able to exist in college. And that's, frankly, that's why you bring in a Brian Daboll. You need someone to, you know, work with him, be patient with him, and confidence has got to play into it too. You know, I think he's got to get confident in believing that what Brian Daboll is going to be, you know, installing for him, what Tierney's going to be, you know, working with him on, that he can trust them. And then getting to know the new receivers that he's gotten from them.
So Charles, we've talked with you about the idea of Minnesota, you know, potentially punting on JJ McCarthy after 10 games played after being drafted. He's in the quarterback competition with Kyler Murray, and yeah. Murray was asked about, you know, what kind of the toughest part of getting into Kevin O'Connell's offense is. And he said, quote, "Me already being behind and not getting the reps that you would typically want a guy to get learning an offense is probably the toughest part," which obviously generated some reaction there. What do you think about those comments from Murray and the quarterback competition in Minnesota and how that's shaping up?
I don't, you know, it's not great. Like, when I heard it, I thought, okay, this sounds like, to me, if I'm, you know, when we watch press conferences, we can always translate to each other. Like, okay, they said this or they didn't say this, and we kind of know what they're getting at. For me, I think when I heard that, in my mind, I thought, this is a guy who walked in here thinking, I'm the starting quarterback, so I should be getting all these reps. I should be, you know, there clearly should be, I think in Kyler's mind, at least this is how I interpret those comments, that in his mind, he thinks there's already a clear pecking order in the quarterback room. And Nady's right about this, by the way. Maybe there should be, but that he's like, look, I'm coming in here to be the starter. I should be getting, you know, the starting reps. Like, everything should be focused on me right now, catching up as quickly as possible rather than splitting up, you know, any of these reps or going through. I think what's curious about this right now is that externally, and I think even internally, everything points to this not really being a quarterback competition, right? We all,
yes.
I don't think a lot of people are buying that even exists. And there's nothing I had heard, you know, whether it was going to the combine, coming out of the combine, heading toward the draft, you know, and after Murray ended up in Minnesota, there was nothing I had heard about really McCarthy being in the plans there as the starting quarterback. And they've obviously played out the narrative. I think some of that's because ownership, you know, there's an affinity for McCarthy amongst, you know, ownership. I think they, you know, they spent a high draft pick on him. So there's this idea of not publicly basically going out there and saying, yeah, you know, we probably blew this pick. But I think when Kyler goes there, his thought is, I'm playing for a long-term contract extension in 2027 and beyond. That's what my 2026 is about. So when I walk in, I expect to be treated like, okay, we're sliding all our chips on you. We're going to figure this out as quickly as possible and give you the best opportunity possible. But I don't think him. The problem is when he says it publicly. What bothers me about this is you really kind of look back through Kyler's history. You know, I mean, even if you go to college and, you know, when he played at Oklahoma, like he's
kind
really,
of a crybaby.
Really, I mean, well, he's not. My thing is, when has he really been thrust into a situation where he had to really actually fight to be that starting quarterback? I mean, like he was the anointed. I mean, he had the high school record that he had, which was ridiculous. when he's in college, you know, obviously before he becomes the starter at Oklahoma, you know, he's in the Oakland A's system and you know, football is kind of a back burner thing. But once he became the starter at Oklahoma, pretty much whenever Kyler's been considered to be, hey, we think you're a starting quality quarterback, going all the way back to high school, he's never really been put in a situation where he's had to fight for anything or split reps or all these different things in terms of the reality of how a team actually looked at him. He got to Arizona. I mean, they booted, Josh Rosen just to get to Kyler. You know, he just took this guy in the first round, the year before. The one situation where he kind of got to a point where the team had said, you know, we're not going to do this with you anymore was last year with Jacoby Brissett. And look how that turned out, right? I mean, the organization's like, we don't even want you around anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's not great. You know, it's not – in some respects, I get where he's coming from, but he also has to understand what the organization's trying to set up here. And even if he's being – I'm sure there are very – strong suggestive notions behind the scenes that you're our starting quarterback. He's just going to have to deal with, you know, what this is right now. But this, in some ways, I think this fits, honestly, with a narrative of kind of how he's carried himself, how he's been perceived by teammates. You know, he doesn't always say the right things all the time. But, you know, I think this is a point too where he knows I have to be selfish right now, because if I don't get this done here in 2026, I might not be a starting quarterback in the NFL after 2026. So, you know, this is like finessing the refs in an NBA game where you're like, keep talking about the officiating and then eventually things will go your way. I think him saying what he said publicly probably puts a little bit of pressure on the Vikings to, okay, maybe we need to start to shift this quote unquote quarterback competition publicly, the focus of this, into what's really going on, which is Kyler's the starter, and you just need to start treating him like the starter.
Yeah, but like you said, one, it's delicate for them, probably for O'Connell too. And also, I love, like, you know, you're saying the right things when these guys are talking about their relationship, and then this comment is basically him saying, I mean, everybody knows JJ sucks, right? Like, I need all the reps. Like,
well,
you know,
they gotta get JJ ready anyway, Charles, because Call of Duty comes out in the fall, and we know that Kyler will be useless that week. So you gotta get JJ ready to go for that week.
Put the Call of Duty. I mean, maybe that's true though.
JJ ready for that week.
I think there is certainly, Kyler's not dumb, man. He knows when he says those things, he understands what the implied message is from him, which is like, hey, I'm the starter, catch me up, right? Like, we're not, you know, I know we're doing this thing where we're saying it's a quarterback competition, but he certainly does not seem to think it's a quarterback competition. You don't make those comments if you really honestly believe you're competing for the starting job. You make those comments if you're like, I am the starter, I'm here. Like, you know, treat it that way and let's get things moving. Not great. Not a great way, I think, to kind of head into camp. But I will say this. It is kind of absurd, the facade that's kind of been put around this whole thing, because thus far, I don't think there's anybody in media who's dealt with that team or talked to, you know, anybody on that staff where there has not been a very, very strong implied message that, you know, J.J. McCarthy is not the starter there. He's not going to be the starter there. He's not, you know, they're doing what they can to, you know, keep him competitive, maybe keep his head in it. I wouldn't doubt that maybe there's an element, too, of you dress this up because at some point you're going to have to move on from McCarthy. Maybe you still think he's an asset. Because look at Anthony Richardson. The second we knew he was toast in Indianapolis, we knew it wasn't happening for him. What happened to his trade value? It went to zero.
Yep.
Like, there's nothing you were going to give up for Anthony Richardson. I think McCarthy's a season from being worth nothing on the trade market.
So, Charles,
meanwhile,
go ahead.
I was going to just ask about the AJ Brown. You knew that there was going to be some post divorce, you know,
yeah,
revelations. What do we think of what AJ has said here about Jalen Hurts?
Well, we knew. It just tells me, you know, he comes out and he says the two things that I think were the biggest. Like, and this is what drives me crazy about when you kind of play this game with teams. First, Nick Sirianni comes out and he basically says, you know, hey, guys don't have to be best buddies, you know, on NFL teams, or, you know, he's, you know, it was a massive word salad of him if you really boiled it down, was just, yeah, you know, these guys weren't really, they weren't vibing with each other, but, you know, it's an NFL team, and often guys, you don't all have to vibe together to be a good team, or, you know, good teammates or whatever. And then AJ comes out and says that, you know, he and Jalen Hurts had drifted from each other, and no kidding. It's pretty clear. Like, we all saw that happen over the course of last season, and, you know, you play this game, and I appreciate, frankly, AJ Brown for just saying it, because we knew that was the reality. We knew, I mean, it's funny because I think people forget that, like, the whole streaming thing when he, you know, was making comments about, I mean, basically making comments about his quarterback situation in Philadelphia and the frustrations that he was having. This has been going on now for, you know, more than a full season. And it's, I think it just, everything that we talk about, you know, everything that we see and perceive, especially in a situation like that, where it's so obvious, you have two guys that are really not on the same page with each other personally, and they're getting there professionally. It's real. And just because a team wants to deny it and, you know, dress it up however they can, often what you believe is going on and what you see in front of your own eyes is, it's the truth.
So, Charles, on the Malik Nabers front, you know, he tore the ACL last year. He's got the procedure earlier this year to clean things up. And it just feels like the conversation coming out of there just keeps drifting further and further back about when they hope he's going to be available, right, and hope to get back on the field. What are you making this? And if you're a Giants fan, how concerned are you growing about Malik Nabers right now?
I mean, you know, John Harbaugh is out here saying that, you know, he won't, you know, thinks he's going to be back, quote unquote, soon. There's no, you know, what does that mean? You know, what does soon mean? What is, you know, in terms of when he's actually going to be able to get on the football field and, you know, play at a high level. I don't know what, I don't think anybody knows quantifiably what the word soon means, like, you know, put a number on it. And I don't, you know, they won't do that, because the fact of the matter is, I don't think they thought they would be at this point now after he had to have the cleanup procedure. And I'm telling you though, when you talk to people around the league, just about the knee repair he had and then the cleanup afterward and sort of what realistic timelines are, we might get to like the middle of the season before Malik Nabers is really, and again, this is just the assessment of others who have watched players kind of go through this before, who understand. And you know, players aren't all the same. It's not a cookie cutter situation. Maybe he's able to get on a faster timeline to getting back on the field and being the player he was. But I don't know, man. I would not be surprised if we get to midseason. This is something we're talking about in like week 5 or 6, you know, and he's still not out there. I'm telling you, there's certainly, after the cleanup procedure happened and it really put raised a lot of questions and a lot of ambiguity in the franchise about when exactly he was going to be able to get back on the field playing competitive football. It sounds to me like this is something where I would not be shocked if they put him on PUP to start the season. And then, you know, all of a sudden, I think they will do everything not, you know, they can to not do that, because they don't want to box themselves into him missing that kind of, you know, time to start the season. But yeah, it's not great. And there's no shortage of people around the league who look at that and go, you know what, I bet you maybe we don't even see him until October.
So $500 million freaking dollars for Patrick Mahomes, huh? The wild thing to me about this, Charles, is that, like, there's, you know, incentives. So it's like $505 billion that he's getting.
Million.
Incentives, you know, incentives can get him to like 522. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
incentives, yeah, can give him a tiny little fraction more of this unbelievable money. But I don't know. I guess nothing, like with a Mahomes or with a top quarterback, nothing really surprises me. But that still seems just massive to me.
Well, some of that is, you know, it's funny because there's certainly, that's an agent marker. You know, there's
right. It's reworked. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's the whole idea of like being, you know, hey, first player to sign a, you know, a contract in excess of $500 million, that really rolls off of, an agent's tongue when he's out recruiting or he's out recruiting to find their next client. Like, that's pretty awesome. Players, you know, obviously it's a pretty massive, you know, ego stroke for any player to say I was the first to get to this point. The deal to me, I mean, it doesn't make any – I'm not surprised at all. It's been years that he's been underpaid, and they could have done a makeup contract and made up a lot of the money. It was crazy to me that you would look at, like, the top 10 paid quarterbacks and be like, Mahomes is not in this group. How is this, you know, even possible at this point when we talk about annual average value? I think he'll probably end up making most of that, $500 million, and – to me, though, the deal, well, we're all focused on Mahomes and, you know, him getting the deal done and maybe playing through, you know, being locked up through 2033 and all that. The first thing I thought about is, like, okay, so Lamar Jackson's up for an extension, you know, that he's got another season beyond 2026, but that's an extension that the Ravens have talked about doing. I think the Cowboys would like to get another deal done with Dak to kind of extend. He's got two more years left, but they would like to get another deal locked in with him to, you know, at least lengthen that now rather than wait until the last minute to do it. Those are both guys that I think this will really affect. And then I'm telling you, I look at that 2024 quarterback class and I'm like, man, you know, if you're Caleb Williams, if you're Jaden Daniels, if you're Drake May, if you're Bo Nix, like, this really impacts you. Like, especially if you can come out and have a banner 2026 season, you're all up for extensions, you know, coming off of your third season. You know, C.J. Stroud to a lesser standpoint, Bryce Young to a lesser standpoint, but everybody right now who's sitting there lining up for a contract, especially, you know, the really young players, those agents are all going to go to the table and go, I don't know, can we get him to the top of the heap? If you're Drake May's agent, you're saying, okay, well, Drake May's going to be a $65 million a year player. Like, the guy was, you know, almost the league MVP. He just went to the Super Bowl in year two. If Jaden Daniels can replicate what he did his first year in the league, that's another guy where the agent's going to be saying, highest paid player in football when we do this extension or pretty close to it. So that's what I think about it, is just how the ripple effects are going to happen. You know, go into that 2024 class. I mean, you think Caleb Williams, if his arc in year two is the same arc he brings into year three, he's going to be the highest paid player in football, right? Those are all, that's what's so wild about, really. I mean, maybe you could even put Nix in that group. All four of those players, the agents would, you know, if their current trajectory stands, would want to go into their contract negotiations after 3 years saying, okay, well, the next contract, this is going to be, you know, Patrick Mahomes deal plus a dollar. Like, we're going to try to get our guys to the top of the heap. So yeah, it's going to have some pretty big ripple effects. And that's without even talking about, you know, some of the veterans right now who are trying to play themselves back into, you know, a long-term whether that's Kyler. I mean, come on, I don't, you know, probably doesn't affect Kyler as much. I can't ever see him signing them, you know, anything close to that, or Tua, or some of these guys that are trying to lock down, you know, longer term deals. But those young guys, heck yeah, that 2024 class, man. If they live up to what they've done the first 2 years in their career, you know, from an overall standpoint, I'm telling you that is going to be a ton of money that teams are going to be pouring into that quarterback class.
Yep, no doubt about it, Charles. Thank you, sir. As always, appreciate you taking time to be with us. You sounded great the whole time. You powered through, and we appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Feel better.
Thanks for having me.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on the program. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. And Joe Rexroad, it's going to make a lot of people mad. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.